You're listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
A person over on the line coming to us from the States, the great old US of A. We've got Thea, who's here to talk about their new single, Hoki Whenua Mai, Return the Land. Good morning to you, Thea. How are you?
Oh, kia ora, and good afternoon to you, mate. I'm very good.
Oh, good afternoon. Is it afternoon over in the States?
Yeah, my song technically isn't even out yet over here because it's still the 3rd and the 4th is tomorrow.
That's so paradoxical.
I know, right?
It's so bizarre. Sometimes I think about how, you know, like the distributors on Spotify and so on for artists. I'm like, couldn't artists just do it themselves? But actually, if you think about it, it is quite a lot of work to put out music on wherever you put your music out on.
Right. Juggling time zones is crazy.
It is crazy.
It's cool, though, because perhaps I get two release days. I get my New Zealand one and my American one.
Mm-hmm. How is the US treating you at the moment? Are you doing a lot of shows?
I am, and I'm freaking loving it. It's so good. They're all very different shows as well. Like, for example, last week I performed at Missoula Pride, and Missoula is like, honestly, I had never actually heard of Missoula until I became fascinated with the TV show Yellowstone. And so then, and they filmed in Missoula, they filmed some of the show there. But it's pretty much, they like to describe it as a blue dot in a red sea. It is extremely democratic, extremely gay. So everyone walks around and looks like they're like super howdy cowboy, pew pew.
Yeah, yeah.
But like literally so queer, it's really cool. So they, you know, wear the clothing, but are incredibly open-minded and awesome people. So yeah, that was my show last week, and then I'm going to Seattle in 2 days to perform there, and then Utah, and I have a show in Los Angeles as well, opening support for Los Bichos, who's a really badass all-girl band from London. So, yeah.
Cool.
It's pretty fun.
Wow. You're linking up with a lot of international acts. That's cool. That comment about, you know, looking like cowboys but being super queer. Brokeback Mountain Energy, is that the kind of vibe?
Yes.
Cracker.
Yeah. It was really beautiful and kind of heartening to see, because obviously so many like subcultures, like, I mean, look at Beyonce, Cowboy Carter and things like that are like so influenced by like the Western vibes, but it's like you want to be able to embrace that, but you also don't want the homophobia, the transphobia, the racism, any of that. So it was just really special being there with so many Indigenous folks. The city like borders the reservation. On my day off, I went to the Buffalo Range, where it's like literally thousands of acres of Indigenous land, where they like allow you to drive in your four-wheel drives around and get to witness the buffalo, which obviously were once driven to the point of nearly extinction. And so it was really cool. I'm still buzzing from how spiritually fulfilling and special that was, getting to go to Missoula, and I'm looking forward to going to Seattle and performing.
That's awesome. You know, it's funny about the about Native American culture, because I had never thought about this, but my brother recently pointed out that a lot of American states are actually Native American place names, like Alaska, Arizona, Idaho, Iowa, Kansas, Arkansas. They're all Native American names.
Yeah, and even Seattle. It's named after like one of the Paramount Chiefs in that area.
Wow.
Yeah, there's a lot of really beautiful names that you're like, oh my gosh, they're like so iconically American, but they're Indigenous.
Yeah, it's something you don't really think about. Whereas here, it's, I think we're much more conditioned to associate te reo names with te reo places. But there are places that trip you up, like just outside of Otipoti, there's a place called Waihola, which sounds like a te reo name, but there's no L in the te reo alphabet. So it's like, how did that name come about?
Yeah, true.
It's cracker. I want to shout out you for getting a Radio 1 alumni in the video for this new song that we're talking about, Hoki Whenua Mai. You recruited Te Aniwa Niwa Patterson for the video as one of the Wahine ghosts clad in colonial dress. Did you know that she used to have a show on The One?
No, I had no idea. That's crazy.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Did not tell me that. I will be calling her up and saying, hey, that's really cool. I had no idea.
Yeah. She used to co-host like a, it was a pretty intellectual show about, a lot of political things. It was called The Gist.
It's
and it was
so cool.
It was one of the best shows.
So smart.
She's, very, very smart person. Now, the track, Hoki Whenua Mai, opens with marching band drums, and they reappear all throughout the track. Was their inclusion to sort of use settler culture in abbreviated terms in a backhanded way, given that the song is about land back and the harms perpetuated by colonization?
Mm-hmm. Yep, you totally got it. Yeah, I really love if you've watched any of the videos, you'll notice I really enjoy flipping the narrative in that respect by using the clothes that were pushed upon us to oppress and control us and remove, you know, the beauty of our culture and the way that we dress and things like that. And to kind of give some kind of conformity as well, right? Mm-hmm. I really love almost, decolonizing or re-indigenizing by taking super colonial sounds like marching drums, which just makes you think of, you know, London and all of the, you know, yes, literally just going to battle and things like that.
Yeah.
And other sounds, like, you know, I use a lot of accordions, a lot of strings. There's like church bells in this one as well.
Yes.
In verses, you hear the church bells, which obviously is very significant. And so, yeah, it's very, very intentional. And I love kind of mixing, like having the sounds indicate that we're going to battle, and then have the lyrics be super empowering, haere Māori. It's kind of a nice mix. And I also have used very intentionally taonga pūoro in most of the waiata that are on this new record as well, but chosen because obviously each, you know, taonga pūoro has its own, Māori instrumentation has its own like kind of meaning and symbolism. And so in this one, as the title suggests, Hoki Whenua Mai, Return the Land, it makes sense that I use the pūtaratara, which almost forms like a little, like a bass sound. It's like the kind of horn sounding vibe that goes from like the left to the right. It like pans, and it's in the verses, but then in the final haka, and that's like a conch that is traditionally used to symbolize war and like warn people of impending battle, right? So this is kind of that. It's like it's been awesome to be able to produce this one and like carefully select all the layers, and it's been so much fun. Mm-hmm.
I love that those layers reflect all the meaning of the song. I want to touch on once more the drum thing, because it's, you know, appropriating symbols of oppression. And I don't know if you've seen, but Sabrina Carpenter has been under fire for her like a new album cover or something where it seems quite misogynistic. But I think if you can't appropriate symbols of oppression and parody them and kind of reflect them, then isn't that whole point of isn't like a lot of art coming under fire then, you know?
Yeah. Oh no, for sure. I haven't seen. I don't know what the Sabrina thing is. I'm not sure, but I do know what you're talking about, because I feel like obviously people that are educated and that understand and can look at things like, you know, and
unpack,
try and understand what you're saying are great. But if you don't understand that, then they'll usually get really offended and not quite get what you're going for. But like in Boardhead, for example, I dressed myself like Queen Victoria, who colonized us. And so I wore like a cross around my neck, obviously symbolizing the church and like, you know, all of these things. And then people were like, why are you saying, but you're saying curse us with churches and teach us your ways. You're like, you're saying that the church cursed you, but you're wearing a thing. It's like, no, that's the whole point. It's like, you know,
yeah, it's
trying to whiteface and take that power, and it's almost blasphemous because you're like wearing symbols of the church whilst criticizing it. So yes, you are Very right. That's what I love to do sonically as well, by using the marching drums, which conjure up images of many armies of white people marching to take over land. But in this case, it's quite the opposite.
It's just that whole reaction to that song, to Baldhead, is insane, because it speaks to a lack of critical thinking, which is very prevalent in our time, it feels. And also, you know, the whole death of the author thing. Who has responsibility for their work anymore? It's ridiculous. You can't control how it's perceived.
Normally you've got, you know, like, because that, yeah, when that appeared on TikTok, you know, it starts off and it, like, really gets shown to all the people who totally, like, tautoko the kaupapa and indigenous folks around the world. And then slowly, the more popular something gets, it obviously gets shown to people who, you know, katsunga pihi, and people will get really aggravated with it. And but I really love that it's like, I just put it out there, and it kind of just you know, invites a lot of discussion. And sometimes we'll just block comments, but oftentimes like, I've seen the person who actually said, why are you you know, wearing the cross and blah blah blah, then other folks came in, other Māori, and educated them, and then they removed their comment.
Okay, because
it just shows that they, like, initially went in on the defense, and then they got educated, understood, and they were like, okay, now I look a bit, you know, foolish, but hey. So there are some really awesome things that come out of it as well.
That's good.
But yeah, if it's ever too, like, toxic, it's just goodbye. Not for you.
Yeah, go in with a level head if you are confused, at the very least, which it sounds like some of these people are. I want to move on from that chat now, and I want to talk about some of the narratives that you're imbuing in this track, as you've said that the feminine narrative around colonization gets overlooked. When you're talking about harms that were targeting, I guess, women and queer people and during colonization, are you referring to, I guess, like, the loss of social and political agency under settler capitalism, and how the special connection between wahine and whenua was alienated?
Many levels, yes. Obviously, the literal, like, manifestation and embodiment of, like, our divine feminine is within Papatua Nuku and everything, you know, that she represents, and when, like, even the fact that our word for placenta is also our word for land, you know. In, like, for example, in the verse where it says, "You've stolen our children, my body is broken. Why did you come here? You rule us with fear." There's, like, a couple of layers there. I really wanted to reflect on, like, obviously the missing and murdered Indigenous women and children, which we have seen is just, like, a disease that is worldwide, but really, you know, seen within the residential school survivors, and obviously those who did not survive, who've been found in their thousands lately. But yeah, I wanted to, you know, there's articles and papers that are written recalling, like, the stolen generations, both with our relatives in Australia, but particularly, you know, within the like, the social system in New Zealand, the social care system, the missionary schools, which, like, my grandmother got sent to and whipped until she stopped speaking Reo Māori, which was the only language she spoke at home, because my great-grandmother was very, very fierce and refused to speak English. And so, yeah, kind of, I suppose, also, obviously, the forced removal of children, which is still happening now, yeah, the many generations of folks that are, like, our parents' age who, yeah, is just still recovering from, like, these generations of just, yeah, our children and our women being stolen, and their reproductive rights, and just everything just being so controlled and restricted. So I guess, like, at its heart, I wanted to shine a light on that, like, and obviously, like, the fetishization and the objectification of women, but also how, like, obviously how we, like, handle our environment, and how we deal with our most vulnerable, which is namely women and children, is, yeah, really influenced by the ideals of colonization. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of all of those things.
It's a lot. And it's not only hard to unpack that history, but it's hard to unpack that history when there are so many lies told about it, like that women in Māori society were subservient to the men, like it was a kind of patriarchal system, which it very much wasn't. You know.
Oh, yeah, I don't know where... I mean, obviously that... Well, actually, no, I do know where that comes from, because that's what I studied. But exactly, because much like a lot of the other notable books in the world... most of the articles, resources, and doctrine about pre-colonial Māori life was written by the first people that came here that could read and write, which were men. And so therefore they looked at the way that we, our society and what our women did and what our men did and how our men treated women and blah, 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 through their own lenses, which were, extremely misogynistic and all of those things. And so there's so many things that just haven't translated. And if anyone is interested, I really encourage you to go and do some awesome reading of, Ngahui has got this book called Te Awatua, which was her like master's thesis. It's all about pre-colonial views around periods. And it shows just how deeply adored and treasured our woman were in pre-colonial times. And even to the point where I'll just give you one thing. Okay, so one of our rites where our warriors would put the tapu of war upon themselves before going out and therefore protection was to smear period blood on their faces. And I just love this. This is just so cool, because so often in things are starting to slowly change, but the generalized Western view is obviously to view women and our periods as putrid, whereas the whakaaro Māori is potent, right? Mm. Like spiritually powerful and honestly remarkable, life-giving. Even our creation story, she delves into that as well, about the fact that our first human that was created was of course one, a woman, and hine ahu wane, and secondly that she was made from the red stained soils called kura waka. That's like our sacred beach, which resides, it's red because it resides at the vulva of Papa Tuanaku, so it's pretty much stained with her period blood.
Wow.
So there's so many things like that. So please go read. There's a lot of remarkable wisdom and things that, will hopefully really help you decolonize and fall in love with your wahinetanga.
As we all should. You've got an album on the way. Hopefully coming this year. Can you reveal any sort of area when it might drop? Is it going to be coming up before or after Libra season?
It should be. Everything's sort of fluid right now, especially when it comes to vinyl production and things. But yeah, I'm looking at her finally being out by the end of the year.
Okay.
So think the latter end of the Pākehā year.
I will look forward to that. I'll put it in my calendar.
Thank you. I'm excited to release it. It's like my, as it should be. It's my proudest work to date, and it's been really special making it.
Awesome. And you can tell there's so much love and time that's gone into it, because I know it's been worked on for quite a long time, I imagine.
It has been, you're right. I thought was going to be the record, and then I was like, nah, boom, restarted it.
Nice. Well, that shows a certain neuroticism, but also shows a certain dedication. So, I appreciate you.
It's called a debut. You can only do it one time, so I might as well make sure I'm very, very happy with it and not just pushing something up for the sake of it.
Yeah, for sure, man. And thank you for coming on the program today and talking to me about Hoki Whenua Mai. Really appreciate it, and can't wait to see what else you make and see when the album drops.
Kia ora e hua, tēnā rawa, tēnā koe Zach. That's awesome. Appreciate your taupoko, and thanks for playing my music, and thanks to everyone who's listening.
Of course. Thank you very much. Take care, man. So yeah. All right, folks, that was Thea. We're talking to Thea about the new track, Hoki Whenua Mai, Return the Land, which we're going to play for you right now. Then at 10 o'clock, we'll have a corridor with Solomon Crook about his new EP, Beneath the Morning Tree. Very much looking forward to that as well. Here is Thea with her new song, Hoki Whenua Mai. You're listening to the one, Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi.
Was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcasts.